Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
For a moment, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the first canto, chapter 17, text number 38. Suta uvacha abhyartitastadatasmai stanani kalaye dado jutam panam striyasuna yatradanas chaturvida. Suta Goswami said, Maharaj Parikshit, thus petitioned by the personality of Kali, gave him permission to reside in places where gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter were performed. Purport. The basic principles of irreligiosity, such as pride, prostitution, intoxication, and falsehood, counteract the four principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. The personality of Kali was given permission to live in four places, particularly mentioned by the king, namely the place of gambling, the place of prostitution, the place of drinking, the place of animal slaughter. Srila Jiva Goswami directs that drinking against the principles of scripture, such as the Sotramani Yajna, association with women outside marriage, and killing animals against the injunctions of scriptures, are irreligious. In the Vedas, two different types of injunctions are there for the pravrittas, or those who are engaged in material enjoyment, and for the nivrittas, or those who are liberated from material bondage. The Vedic injunctions for the pravrittas is to gradually regulate their activities towards the path of liberation. Therefore, for those who are in the lowest stage of ignorance and who indulge in wine, women, and flesh, drinking by performing Sotramani Yajna, association of women by marriage and flesh eating by sacrifices are sometimes recommended. Such recommendations in the Vedic literature are meant for a particular class of men and not for all. But because they are injunctions of the Vedas for particular types of persons, such activities by the pravrittas are not considered adharma. One man's food may be poison for others. Similarly, what is recommended for those in the mode of ignorance may be poison for those in the mode of goodness. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu therefore affirms that recommendations in the scripture for a certain class of men are never to be considered adharma or irreligious, but activities are factually adharma, and they're never to be encouraged. The recommendations in the scriptures are not meant for the encouragement of such adharma, but for regulating the necessary adharma gradually towards the path of dharma. So in this way, we find in this verse, the chatur adharma, or the four types of irreligious activities. And we see that in this verse, we find the basis for Srila Prabhupada's four regulative principles. Otherwise, one doesn't find anywhere in the scriptures that four regulative principles are to be followed. But the point is that when these illicit activities are going on, then the influence of Kali will be there. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada, in order to counteract the influence of Kali, has established four regulative principles. Before Srila Prabhupada, there was no such thing in our Sampradaya. It didn't exist. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was not asking for such a thing at the time of initiation or for members of his society. Nor did Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur speak about the four regulative principles, or the Sukadev Goswami, or Krishna to Arjuna in the Gita. It's not found, the four regulative principles. So in that way, one might wonder, where does this all begin? But it begins exactly here, because Kali is described as the lowest of the celestial beings. It is said that the personality Kali resides in the higher planetary systems, and thus is under the jurisdiction of Indra and in that realm. And all of the yugas have a personified personality, a deity that resides there in the higher planetary system. So Kali also. And Kali, however, most of the time is inactive, because it is said that Kali Yuga lasts 432,000 years, and then Dwapara Yuga doubled the time. And then Treta Yuga three times as long as Kali Yuga, and the Satya Yuga four times as long as Kali Yuga. So, in that way, we can see that Kali gets the shortest time. Satya Yuga gets four times more time than him. And Dwapara gets double. So it is kind of disturbing to Kali that he gets only a short time. But anyway, he tries to make hay while the sun shines. And as much as possible, as much as possible, Kali tries to not waste a moment. So Kali is in a way a deity of a lesser importance than Maya. Maya is Durga, and Maya keeps us into material existence. Maya, she has, as Durga, she is described to have 10 arms, seated on a lion. Maya is holding different weapons in her arms, and in one of the arms, a trident, which represents the three types of misery in this world, Adiatmika, Adibhautika, Adidaivika, Klesh, or suffering from body and mind, suffering from other living beings, like that. And suffering from the demigods. So yes, that is Maya. Maya is dealing like that with us. So in a sense, Maya is more powerful than Kali, because Maya is the deity that controls the entire material energy. She is Durga, which means difficult to go. Or sometimes it's called a fort, Durga, or a jail. So she's the superintendent of the jail that is material existence. And it doesn't matter in which yuga, whether it's Satya Yuga, or Treta Yuga, or Dwapara Yuga, Maya is always active. Maya is active all throughout the universe. On the heavenly planets, there is no influence of Kali. In the heavenly planets, it is said it is always like Treta Yuga, always. So it never goes down to Dwapara or Kali. It just stays Treta Yuga. Yeah. Or Satya Yuga, Treta or Satya, in the heavenly planets. Yeah. But it is here, in this particular realm, that Kali gets his influence. So Kali's influence is there, and Kali is corrupting us. But we should understand that Maya's influence will always be there, and even Lord Brahma is not free. Even Lord Brahma fell prey to the illusory energy. So in that way, we understand that the power is the power that we are really concerned with, is the power of the illusory energy. And the illusory energy makes us think that that the body is the self, and that enjoying the senses is the goal of life. That's the illusory energy, basically. And it makes us think that this world is basically a nice place. There are a few problems, but if you manage to avoid them, then everything is fine. So you just have to be smart, and you'll be okay. And that's what the neighbors are thinking. And that's what others are also thinking. That's what everyone is thinking in the world. Because we are all thinking that this world is a place to enjoy. Prabhupada pointed at the children's playground with his cane. And it had a sign that said, "Children's Fairyland." And Prabhupada turned around and pointed at the skyscrapers of the city and said, "Adults' Fairyland." So the same thing. So spiritual life is very different. But even in our movement, we also are under the influence of Maya. Giriraj Maharaj, when he was a brahmachari, said to Prabhupada, he said that sometimes I'm in Maya. Prabhupada said, "What do you mean? You're always in Maya." And that's the situation. Maya still has a grip on us. And therefore, it is as if a person has been sleeping and had an intense dream while sleeping, and then when you wake up, you're still acting according to the dream. In the dream, maybe we were chased, you know, by an enemy, and we were like running for our life, somehow or other escaping, being followed everywhere. Just managed to escape. And finally, wake up, and you're still looking over your shoulder, you know, like, is somebody following me? Well, you woke up. So we are sort of half dreaming, half sleeping at this stage. We've seen devotees that were on book distribution, and in the late 70s, I was out on a book distribution marathon, and it was very cold. It was winter, and we were sleeping in vans, and there was no heating. So the only heat came was from the bodies of other people, and it was freezing. It was seriously cold, and we were taking cold baths, and we were eating even cold food. Right? So it was getting too much, you know. So we said we were getting sick, and we wanted a room. So they said, okay. The management said, yes, you can rent one room in a motel. So we did. We rented one room in a motel. Motels are different than hotels. I don't know if they have them in South Africa, but motels, generally speaking, are low, and it's like a wing of rooms, you know, on the outside of a building, right? And so we took the last room, and then as soon as it was dark in the evening, all the devotees, they rocked up and sneaked into the room. We put all the beds against the wall, and all the furniture to one side, and we had about, what shall I say, I think, well, maybe 25 devotees in that room. So it was pretty full. Anyway, we all slept well on the floor and mats and this, that. The next morning, we had a wooden board on the floor, and on there a serious stove from the Hare Krishna kitchen with gas bottle and everything. And we were cooking a pot of khichdi on there, big pot. For japa, you had like a step forward and a step back. That was about it. So we're all chanting japa. Serious. And Well, in the middle of that, in the morning, the lady from the motel knocked on the door. She opened it, and then she saw all the Martians in the room, you know. with a big big cooking pot in the middle. she screamed. So we were back in the van. What to do? So book distribution was going on, and one of the devotees, he was very serious about book distribution, and he would, in the middle of the night, he would just get up and try and distribute books to a sleeping devotee, and he would just be very serious about it. He would just get up, wake, and he was sleepwalking. He was not awake, but he would wake you up, and he wouldn't leave you alone until you'd bought the book. So the best thing to do was just buy the book. So. Yeah, so this is something like sleepwalking. That is the point. That while we are in our dreamlike state, we are we can even sleepwalk. So this is what it means to be still under the influence of the illusory energy. So Srimad Bhagavatam pierces that illusion. And makes it clear to us what the real goal of life actually is. And shows us that the temporary material world is not really meaningful. That the real aim in life is to become transcendental. There is another story, the story of Ramanujacharya. And Ramanujacharya, he had various disciples. Of course, the brahmacharis who were living in the ashram. And he also had some grihastha disciples. There was a particular couple. There was a wrestler. And this wrestler, he had seen a very beautiful lady. Very beautiful. And he decided to do anything for her. So he fully dedicated his life to serving her. Whatever she wanted, he was doing. So when she was walking in the sun, he would hold a parasol over her head. And he was constantly serving her. So one day Ramanuja Acharya came past. And he saw how this wrestler was serving this lady. So he said, why are you serving her like this? And the wrestler said, she is so beautiful. So then Ramanujacharya said, you call that beautiful? So the wrestler was a little bit disturbed, but at the same time, he respected the sadhu, so Ramanujacharya said, come and see me tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. and I will show you what beautiful is. So the wrestler came. Ramanuja took him by the hand and took him through different alleys and back ways. And then suddenly they stood in front of the deity of Krishna. Or of Ranganath, actually. So when this wrestler saw the deity, it wasn't just that he was seeing the deity, but he also got special mercy of Ramanujacharya. And because he got that special mercy, he got like more than an ordinary vision. And therefore he saw the deity in a way that ordinary people cannot see due to Ramanuja's mercy. And as a result, he saw the deity like as indeed the most beautiful. And it changed his life completely. It changed his life. And it also changed his marriage. Because from that day on, you could see how the lady was very faithfully serving him, serving her husband, and the roles had reversed. Yeah? Because he had become a saintly person, and now she had respect for him, and now she had actually faith in him. And she was happy to serve him in that way. So they became initiated devotees. So there was some friction between the ashram residents, the brahmacharis, and the householders. The brahmacharis were looking down upon these householders and were saying, they're so attached. These householders are just so attached. So Ramanuja Acharya overheard it. So in the night, when everyone was asleep, and when all the dhotis of the brahmacharis were hanging to dry over the washing line, then Ramanuja Acharya came up to the washing line and he ripped a piece of cloth, just sort of the width of kopins, of each dhoti. He took that cloth and he left. Then Ramanuja Acharya went to the house of the grihasthas. And they were both sleeping. And then Ramanuja Acharya carefully began to take out the golden earrings out of the ears of the lady. Yeah? And then, at one point, she woke up. And she realized that she sort of saw it's Guru Maharaj who's taking my earrings. But he can get only one because I'm sleeping on my other ear. So she turned around. And then Ramanuja left really quick, you know, he quickly disappeared. Right? Then the wife woke up the husband, told the husband, you know, Guru Maharaj came, took the earring. And then I wanted to turn around to give him the second one, and then he left. He said, you foolish woman, why did you have to turn around? Right? You disturbed him, right? Give me that earring. And then early in the morning, when it was time, just before Mangalarti, he went to the temple with the earring, right? And he said, just then, the brahmacharis were waking up and taking bath and were about to put on their dhotis. And then they found that somebody had ripped a piece of the dhoti, and everybody accused everyone, you ripped a piece of my dhoti. No, I did. You ripped a piece of my dhoti. And it was a huge fight within the brahmachari ashram. And just as that fight was reaching a critical stage, you know, Ramanuja Acharya appeared, and just then the wrestler also appeared. And the wrestler said, Guru Maharaj, wait a minute, you forgot to take this. And he brought the other earring. Right? He said, and meanwhile, you know, the brahmacharis were like sort of quieting down in front of Ramanuja Acharya. So Ramanuja Acharya says that, what is going on? He said, yeah, someone ripped a piece of my dhoti. Someone ripped a piece of my dhoti. And it's like this, like it's too much, you know. And then Ramanuja Acharya pulled from under his cloth all the strips. And he said, who ripped a piece of your dhoti? Oops. And then see, and he said, and just see that attached householder. Just see. Huh? I went and I got his gold, and I got only one piece, and then he came to bring the other one. Huh? Who is attached? Huh? Who is attached? So in this way, this famous story about Ramanuja Acharya's disciples is there. And really, how anyone is attached in this world. But if we see the beauty of Krishna, then we can become transcendental. It's like I was reading, it said that Prabhupada wrote a letter to Kirtanananda, and he wrote, if you decorate the deity very nicely with whatever flowers and things are available, then you will not become attracted by the false beauty of this world. So very simple, but very nice. And that is our process. We chant a little Hare Krishna. Then we discuss Srimad Bhagavatam. And we worship the deities, take some Mahaprasadam. Simple, but very powerful. So Srimad Bhagavatam is protecting us. Srimad Bhagavatam is... Let him go play some. Srimad Bhagavatam is, as we see, is it's giving us a warning about Kali and the influence of Kali. Kali is influencing everyone in this age. Everyone is affected by Kali. The whole world became corrupted by Kali. And that's normal now, everywhere. Doesn't matter where you go, where you look. Everyone is like that. I like the story of King Nala and Damayanti, because the idea of Nala and Damayanti was that Damayanti had a Swayamvar. A Swayamvar is a ceremony where a princess may choose a husband from amongst princes. So Nala was very handsome, and Damayanti actually hoped that Nala would come and that she was interested in him. Then, as Nala was on the way to the Swayamvar, Damayanti was so beautiful that even Indra, Agni and Surya were also attracted. So therefore, they decided to compete in this Swayamvar. It was a sort of get-together, and the princes would have to show their power. So suddenly, as Nala was on the way, the three deities appeared before him. Indra appeared, Surya appeared, Agni appeared. So Nala offers his obeisances. Nala says, "How can I serve you?" Indra says, "Well, that's very nice of you that you're offering service, because we actually came with a request." Oh, Nala said, "Whatever you desire, please, how can I serve you?" Indra said, "Can you go to Damayanti Swayamvar on our behalf and ask her to marry one of us?" Oh, Nala said, "That's not fair. I was on the way to the Swayamvar myself." He said, "Well," Indra said, "you gave your word." So before the Swayamvar, already Nala went, met Damayanti, and said, "I'm coming as a messenger of Indra, Surya, and Agni, and they are asking for your hand and are coming in the Swayamvar." So Damayanti was very, very intelligent. So Damayanti said, "You can tell Indra and the others, you can tell them that it will not be possible. It will not be possible because I've already decided upon my husband. I'm going to marry Nala." So in this way, Damayanti had made up her mind. And Nala, well, he was sort of blown out by the whole situation. So he left. And outside, Indra was waiting. And Indra said, "So, what did Damayanti say?" And Nala honestly told everything everything he taught. So then, on the day of the Swayamvara, as Nala was approaching, and other princes were there, there was no sign of Indra, no sign of Surya, no sign of Agni. But what was there? There were three other Nalas. So suddenly there were four Nalas in the whole thing. And they all came before Damayanti and said, "I am Nala, please, you know. Damayanti, you can recognize me." But she couldn't make out who was who. So Damayanti was then praying and saying that as a woman, my only virtue is my chastity, is my dedication to my husband, and I'm fully dedicated to Nala. But now, by tricks, I cannot recognize Nala. Therefore, I pray to the Supreme Lord Vishnu, please protect me. Please protect my chastity. And the next moment, the demigods could not maintain these false forms. And there was only one Nala. Damayanti took the garland, gave it to Nala. Indra, Surya and Agni. Indra said, anyway, it's all right. She really wanted Nala, so that's okay. And they returned to the heavenly regions. But then one day, when Indra was seated on his throne in the royal court, Kali came. Kali came and Kali said, "I urgently require a darshan." "All right, granted," Indra said. While eating some grapes and drinking some soma ras. Then Kali said, "O worshipable Indra, O worshipable Indra, please take note of this. Tat, think it is a great insult to the celestials the way this Nala behaved." As soon as Nala saw that the devatas, that you, Indra, were in the competition, Nala should have stepped aside. How did he dare to compete with you? What arrogance, what pride, what lack of humility. It cannot be tolerated. It is an insult directly. Please allow me to punish him. Indra thought, well, indeed. He really should have offered more respect. Tatastu, so be it. Kali, outside of his regular yuga, was given a license. Kali was getting ready for the action. Kali went, and one day when Nala relieved himself and didn't wash his feet properly, Kali managed to enter into his body. And Kali took over his mind. And Kali possessed his mind. Nala never knew about it. He had no idea. And Kali from then got Nala involved in a gambling match. And Nala lost everything they ever had, even to the point where him and Damayanti had to leave to the forest in one cloth. And then they were in the middle of the forest, and then Nala got all depressed. "I'm such a fool. I've lost everything. I'm not worthy of Damayanti." And he said, "Oh, therefore, I'm leaving." Damayanti said, "No, you can't leave me here in the middle of the forest all alone." He said, "No, I'm not worthy of you." And he left. And he thought that that was his own decision. But actually, that was influenced by Kali. Kali made him leave. And Damayanti was alone, and some hunter came and tried to rape her. But anyway, the chastity worked again, and she cursed, and the hunter died. And like this, she somehow or other came out of the forest and survived the whole thing. Meanwhile, she was expecting from Nala also, and she had a son. And later, Later, Nala came out of the spell of Kali. But he didn't recognize his son. But then a celestial voice said, "No, Nala, please accept your son." So at that time, they were reunited and lived happily ever after and all those things. But the real point is that, yeah, Kali managed to possess Nala. And now it is the age of Kali. So Nali, now everybody. And we're all thinking, I'm a free man, and I'm doing what I want. But we're not. We're not a free man. We're actually influenced by the age of Kali. Everyone. And that is that's why Srila Prabhupada immediately established these four regulative principles. Because then Kali can have no grip. Immediately, the influence of Kali, because when these four illicit activities disappear, then that's the only place where Kali can reside. So that's where Kali is residing, in these four things: meat eating, gambling, intoxication, and illicit sex. And that is why Srila Prabhupada stressed it so much, because he knew, otherwise, how can we be successful in spiritual life? Because Krishna is the supreme pure. And it is said, just like traveling to the sun. You know, you see these movies, spaceship is flying, it's out of control. Spaceship out of control, out of control. The steering mechanism doesn't work. Oh, Captain Kirk, what are we going to do now? Alarm, ground control. Steering mechanism not working. We are getting closer to the sun, and they start perspiring, and it gets really hot, you know, like hotter. And the spaceship is flying towards the sun, and then last minute, you know, Superman comes and saves the day. And thank God, you know, thanks to Superman, everything worked out again. That, you know what I'm, these kind of things. That's when you change to the other channel, you know. There's something better on than this, you know. What to say. So, but it is a fact. Prabhupada says, if you approach the sun, you can go to the sun, but if you go to the sun, you need a body of fire. Otherwise, how can you go to the sun? So Prabhupada says, because the sun is made of fire, therefore you have to have a body of fire to go to the sun. In the same way, if you want to go before Krishna, Krishna is the supreme pure. Therefore, if you want to go before Krishna, you have to be pure. But if we don't, and the chanting of Hare Krishna purifies us. But if we are not, following principles of purity and at the same time engage in all kinds of illicit activity, then it is like the baiting of the elephant, who, you know, has his own shower and takes full bath and then throws dust, a towel of dust, which defeats the whole purpose of baiting. So in this way, we're throwing dust again. Yeah? We're chanting Hare Krishna, but we are throwing dust. And chetu darpanam marjanam bhava mahadavatni nirvapanam. Our hearts have been covered by so much dust from so many lifetimes. And therefore, we are not fully experiencing the effect of the chanting. Pavana janmana kariyari, shavana kirtanam, utanapaya krishna, padapremadhanam. That it is said that if one makes offenses in the matter of chanting the holy name, then one can chant for many, many births, and still one will not get the result of this chanting, which is Krishna Prem. Why is that so? It's because the stock of sinful reactions in the heart, known as aparabdha karma, there is kutam, a stock. And that stock of sinful reactions in the heart creates a sinful inclination. And from that sinful inclination comes a bija, a plan. A plan to engage in some sinful activities. And it comes with us also that far. It comes to the bija, it comes to the plan. And then we have to say, no, 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 this is maya. No, I don't want this. No, no. And stop it. Right? So this is difficult. This is a fight. Therefore, it is a fight with maya. Then, we have knowledge. We have the sword of knowledge, the weapon of knowledge. So by knowledge, we understand, oh, this is the illusory energy attacking me now. Maya is attacking me now. And I know what I'm supposed to do, because knowledge tells me what is prescribed duty. But that's still... Balavan indriyam gramo vidvam samapikarsati. The senses are so strong that even a man of learning is struggling. Even a man of learning is weak. Even he can fall down. Only when we are tasting the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness, when we are tasting love for Krishna, then we are safe from the influence of Maya. Only then are we safe from fall down. Otherwise, we need to always be very careful to take shelter. We wear like a shield of the holy name that protects our heart. We wear like a helmet of transcendental knowledge, or a head of transcendental knowledge. We wear the sunglasses of Guru's instructions, right, which sort of protect our eyes, you know. Maybe some sunscreen, you know, of devotee association that protects us from the piercing rays of Maya's power. And in that way, we need shelter. We need to take shelter. But if we take shelter like this, yes, then we are well protected, because that shelter can actually protect us. Because that shelter is Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is not just a book. Srimad Bhagavatam is described as the literary incarnation of Krishna. Purana go dunoni ha Krishna swadamo bhagate dharma ginadi visaha kalumas trisame Purana go dunoni taha. It says in the age of Kali, Krishna left, and then Kali began, the age of Kali. And dharma, religious principles and knowledge were lost. But from this, but in Bhagavatam, this Bhagavatam, the literary incarnation of Krishna, there all that is again available. So Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. The holy name is none different from Krishna. The devotees are representing Krishna. Prasadam is none different from Krishna. So in this way, we are protected. Daivye sa gunamai mama maya durateya mamedye prapadante mayamitam tarantite. This divine energy of mine, maya, this maya of mine, can easily overcome by those who surrender unto me and engage in my service. Because Krishna surya sam maya hoya amrika yahoe te Krishna tahe nahi maya adhika. Krishna is like the sun, maya is like darkness. Wherever there is Krishna, maya's influence cannot be there. So in this way, we don't have to fear. We don't have to think, how will I conquer? How will I ever conquer this illusory energy? I feel weak. Then it means that we should engage in more hearing and chanting, have more devotee association, and take only Krishna prasada. No potato chips and nothing. Krishna prasada. Say, I offer my potato chips, all right. But actually, they've already been offered to the factory workers. Huh? Actually, to tell you the truth, right? If you're cooking for Krishna, and someone walks into the kitchen and just puts his hand straight into the pot and starts eating from it, will you still offer it to Krishna? No? Well, there was a devotee near Ermelo who had a big chips factory, and one time they wanted me to go there to bless the factory. You know, Swamiji, please come and bless our factory. So I went and blessed the factory and checked it out, and I saw trucks of potatoes coming in and they're being washed and chopped up by machines, and then the slices are dried and they go on the conveyor belt, and then there's a dip and they go through the hot oil and they come out brown and crispy, and then on the other, as they come out, there is some machine that blows on hot spices onto the chips, you know, and they stick, and then the chips are still hot and spicy, and there are the workers, chomp, 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 eating the chips. I was like, okay. so much for the chips, you know. But if we take shelter, right? We take shelter, yeah, then everything is up. There is no doubt that Arjuna, the battle of Kurukshetra before, was going to Krishna to ask Krishna to help. Duryodhana was also going to Krishna. And they were both trying to reach Krishna. So Arjuna reached first. And Arjuna naturally sat at Krishna's feet. Duryodhana sat at Krishna's face. No, it was Duryodhana reached first. I'm wrong. Duryodhana reached first and he sat at Krishna's face. And Arjuna came and sat down at the feet. So Krishna was lying on his back, sort of head on a pillow. So Duryodhana thought, as soon as Krishna opens his eyes, he'll see me first, and then I'll ask him first. Okay? But actually, Krishna saw Arjuna first, because he was lying with his head on the pillow, opened his eyes, and he saw his feet. And he saw Arjuna sitting there. I said, Arjuna, how can I serve you? Arjuna said, I've come with a request, but Duryodhana has also come and he came first. So you please answer his request first. So then, you know, Duryodhana got the chance, you know, he got the chance to choose. And I asked Krishna to please come on his side and fight in the battle. And Krishna said, no, I will not fight. But one side can have my army and the other side can have me. So Duryodhana said, well, if Krishna doesn't fight, what's the use of that? So he chose the army, powerful army. So Duryodhana was very happy, and so was Arjuna, that he had Krishna. So we see that, and who won the battle? Arjuna won the battle with Krishna, and at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, there's that famous verse, Yata Krishna Yogeshwara Tato Vijayir Bhutir Dhruvani Tir Mama. It is said, wherever there is Krishna, there will be victory. There will always be victory. So, that is our understanding. It looks so difficult to conquer Maya. It looks so difficult to conquer Kali. But if simply we just take shelter of more hearing and chanting, and of Krishna Prasad and of devotee association, of serving the deities, then surely, we will be successful. We will be successful. Because Krishna will be there with us, and Maya will disappear. And Kali will have, he only can deal with meat in places where there's meat eating, gambling, intoxication, and elsewhere, he has no power at all. He's powerless. If that purity is there, then by these spiritual activities we can maintain. We can maintain. Then the miracle can happen. That Prabhupada said, crows can turn into swans. Very nice. Okay, maybe some questions? We can't have more kirtan, so we can have question and answers. No, that's all right. That's a fact. So Nala's case was different. Nala simply upset Indra a little bit, and Kali was given special license. But in our case, Kali has full license now. Full license. And Kali was coming into the kingdom, came into the kingdom of Maharaj Pariksit. Where did he come from? He came from his celestial regions. And he needed a residence, and Maharaj Pariksit wouldn't give it. He wouldn't give it. But then Kali surrendered to him, said, okay, I'm existing. Praja, the king, he protects Praja. Praja means that which has taken birth. So everything that has taken birth has a right to exist. Just like if you have birds in this garden, you know, you cannot think like, these birds are disturbing us, we want to get rid of them, shoot the birds or poison the birds, get rid of the birds. No. The birds have as much right to live as we have right to live. They're praja. And you have to let them live according to their nature. Huh? Birds have to eat bird food. And, you know, maybe they'll destroy something. Huh? So, praja has a right to live. So Kali asked for shelter, so he had a right to live. He existed, so he needed to exist somewhere. You see. So Maharaj Pariksit had to give him something by that rule of Dharma. So finally, he said, go and reside in these four, in these places where these four activities are. There was no such place. All right. Reside in places where there's a lot of gold stored. Because there these four activities will be found. And he found. But now, we can see what happened. Now it's spread everywhere. Everywhere. So we... So the reason why I told about Nala was not because Nala was also breaking the four regulative principles. The point was that Kali had a license, and Kali's tactic was to possess his mind. And that's what Kali tends to do. Therefore, when Prabhupada speaks about everyone is under the influence of the age of Kali, then you can see what happens, that Kali takes over the minds of people. And we begin to think in a way of Kali. After Krishna had gone to Dwarka, and Yudhisthira was left behind. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, then it describes that Yudhisthira was waiting for Arjuna to come back. Arjuna had gone to meet Krishna in Dwarka. Arjuna was still not back. And Yudhisthira began to see signs. He began to see that husbands and wives were fighting. He saw that sons did not obey their father. And he saw many such signs. And it looked to him that the age of Kali had begun. But how could the age of Kali begin when Krishna was still on the planet? That's why Yudhisthira began to suspect that Krishna had left. And then Arjuna came back and didn't want to speak. And then it all came out. Krishna had indeed left the planet. So we see the symptoms of Kali. Other questions? Very early to take this on. Question. It's easy, just asking.
There is description of Mahat Tattva and then Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, Karunodakshaya Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
And then
the Mahatattva and Kshirodakshaya Vishnu,
Karunodakshaya Vishnu.
Karana.
Yes.
Not Karuna, Karana, the Karana. Cause.
Yes.
Cause. Yes?
I want more explanation.
You want more explanation on that? Well, basically, the living beings develop a desire to be in the material energy. So, when Mahavishnu is residing on the causal ocean is what separates the material world and the spiritual world. Devidam and Haridam. There Mahavishnu is resting. Mahavishnu glances on the Pradhana. The Pradhana is the potential of the material world. And then he activates by the glands the Pradhana and the Mahatattva becomes manifest. Then at the same time all the universes manifest from the body of Mahavishnu, and he expands himself, and Garbhadakshaya Vishnu enters into each universe. From his navel comes a lotus flower. Lord Brahma is seated on that lotus flower, and then as Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, the Lord enters into the heart of every living being and into every atom. And in this way we can see how the Lord expands himself. When the living being wants to be independent, Krishna is in the spiritual world. Krishna is performing his eternal pastimes in the spiritual world with his liberated devotees. But in his expansions of Mahavishnu or Karandakshaya Vishnu, it's the same. Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kshirodakshaya Vishnu. In these expansions, the Lord is dealing with this domain of Maya, where the conditioned souls are trying to enjoy and act and imitate Radha and Krishna. And that is why men and women are trying to enjoy in this material world, in competition with Radha and Krishna. Trying to imitate the adiras, the loving exchanges between Radha and Krishna. And this is what is going on. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada once said, the whole world is the backdrop for that romance, for that sex life that we're trying to enjoy here in this world. Everything, even beautiful gardens and everything, are for that purpose.
Mm. So, Kshirodakshaya Vishnu.
Kshirodakshaya Vishnu.
Is present.
Is present in every atom and in the heart of every living being as the Super Soul, as Paramatma.
I see. Yeah. Then, Karunodakshaya.
He is Mahavishnu. He is residing on the causal ocean between the spiritual and the material world. And Garbhadakshaya Vishnu goes into every universe and rests in every universe. And Kshirodakshaya Vishnu is also residing on the pole star and there resting on an ocean of milk at the same time.
Okay, I think then...